Why are you pointing at me?
Because you never come out at the beginning of the show.
Okay, well, here I am. Look,
all right.
Look.
Yay,
back
Ryan.
In Mark's garage. It's only marginally really hot.
He got a fan now.
Yeah.
With
well,
a
I've been Mark's fan for a while.
Oh, is it going to be? Kevin's gone, so you're picking
I'm
up
here
the slack.
Instead, yes.
Yeah, oh, God. It's going to be that kind of show. Kevin is gone this week. He just got a new job. Yay, Kevin. He's in sunny Minneapolis, which is how it's usually described.
Oh, yeah.
And so in his stead, we have back...
Mr. Munoz.
Matt Munoz.
Hello, everybody.
Hey, Matt.
How are you?
I just saw you a couple days ago.
You did?
Yeah, twice in 1 week. That doesn't happen very
often. Not very often.
You must be living right.
Well, which one of us?
Yeah.
Both of you.
You
deserve
toss
each other.
Yeah. Watch out.
Yeah, good times. I played a show, and Matt helms a...
Oh, that's right. How did that go?
It went great.
It's you and Phil.
Yep, yep. That's right. Phil, longtime friend of the show. He and I played a show together at the Cactus Cafe, the famous listening room. And then Phil promptly jumped in a van the next day and moved to Portland, Oregon. So, hey, Phil, if you're here in the show, I hope you had a great trip up to Portland.
Good times.
Yep. Was a good time.
He's a swell dude. We were happy to have him around as long as we did.
Yeah. Had I known he was going to be leaving, I wouldn't complain so much about him coming on the show. No, I'm just kidding. I didn't ever complain about him coming on the show.
It bums me out because I was just starting to get to know him, and then he's gone.
Well, you can go back and listen to him on these shows and get to know him through his repeated guest appearances.
That's right.
Which
the vicarious friendship.
Boom, boom, boom.
Didn't his dog eat a pencil one time when I was in here?
The first time it was in Kevin's garage.
How did that happen?
She picked it up off the floor and started chewing on it.
Oh, good
stuff.
Yeah,
she's eating things here.
She's just quietly in the corner, like waiting until we're not paying attention and scope out what she can gnaw on. No, that is a damn good word to use. But
that is a good word.
Okay, I'm getting a little off track here. So before I do that anymore, let's go ahead and play some music. I'm Shane.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Matt.
And I'm Mark.
And this is Somebody Likes It. Last week, we didn't record the show.
We recorded, but not
this
show.
Yeah, Ryan and I recorded. So I think we had mentioned it on the air, the Stone Roses show, which will chronologically air right before this one on our site. But last week, we went with some of the gang from Highly Suspect Reviews, which is another podcast on this site.
The Podfathers podcast.
That's true. Ryan and Chris. And Ryan and I joined them, and we went and watched an advanced screening of Straight Outta Compton, the NWA biopic that is now currently sitting at number one. It was the highest grossing movie in the United States over the last week. And Matt, you said you saw it too?
I did.
Well, so I just want to recap a little bit. So for those of you, I would highly recommend it. Highly recommend that you go check out the Highly Suspect Reviews. It's a great podcast, and they do something new every week. But I just want to kind of basically
it's always movie related.
Yeah, it's always movie. Yeah. So you know, because the reason that we went and hung out with them was because it's a music. We had been talking, you know, over the course of the last year about maybe going and watching a music movie together, since we're the only music related podcast on this website, and that would kind of there's a number of shows that deal with movies and TV, and that would be nice to kind of tie those things together.
Well, cross promotion,
right? Yeah, there's that too.
There's a big word called synergy, I think.
Yes, that's a little too corporate. Yeah, it makes me think of somebody doing like having a ponytail and doing yoga in an office.
Exactly,
you know,
right.
In a boardroom with a PowerPoint presentation while they're doing
yoga.
I just think
of motivational speakers, you know, like pacing back and forth and
like with a Garth Brooks microphone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So anyway, we went in and watched this movie, and it was interesting because the way that it was set up. When we got there a little later than everybody else, and the other crew were on the opposite room, and Ryan and I were facing them as we as
lounging on a couch.
On a couch, which was really interesting. Yeah, because here in the garage, we have microphones that we hold to our mouth. And there they have them all set up where you don't speak into them. So it was,
all right, I can take a hint.
No.
We actually prefer this.
Yeah, we like this better. But and it was interesting because Ryan and I actually, we were pretty much in agreement on.
We were on the same page about what we thought of the movie.
On step by step by step by step. I mean, they were pretty much all on the same page. And so we had a lot to talk about. They normally do a 25-minute show. We did over 50 minutes. So.
Well, I was sitting next to you in the theater, too, and you were pretty demonstrative about your feelings as the thing went on.
Well, okay, that's because I was, number one, I was trying not to fall asleep. I mean, the fucking thing is 2.5 hours long. It starts out kind of like a Scorsese homage.
Oh, yeah. It's,
no
it's
spoilers,
all these,
please.
It's all this action and crazy jump cuts, and you're like, man, this is a blast.
Yeah, I know, and it's really funny.
It would turn on a dime from being funny to dramatic, but it didn't lose any of its energy. And then all of a sudden, it was like, hey, you guys want to talk about paperwork?
Yeah. It's like, let's talk about the bottom line and all of a sudden, everything was directed like it was really square and framed in the shot, and like all of this like playful handheld camera work that was in the first part of the movie was just gone, and it just got silly. It just got, you know what it felt? It felt like just any other faceless, nameless, just every, like, set up each, like, pivotal point in this act's career, and you got to make sure you knock it down.
Mm-hmm. It turned into Hollywood 101 to me.
Yeah, you're right.
It just, it started losing some of the grit that it was supposed to be portraying, and it just started to get really formulaic. And, you know, I think the performances are probably what Head and Shoulders kind of saves the thing, especially.
That was well cast and well acted, for sure. But man, it drags badly for a while.
Yeah, once you run out of stuff to talk about, the thing that I thought was really interesting and what really made the first part of the movie, I thought it was a really smart decision for them to kind of go small. I mean, N.W.A.'s music took on huge themes, and it came out in a time where like big. Bad things were going on in Los Angeles, and they were at the epicenter of that.
Unlike now, when it's all
true, I'm saying that's what they were talking about.
Sure.
And so you can go really, really big on this stuff, or you can go small and get really into the characters and sort of have the theme work in the themes, you know, rather than have that be the overarching thing that what you're doing, have the characters be what you're concentrating on, which one would think would be the important thing to do. But instead, and that's what happens in the beginning, and it's really smart. The funniest things that happen and the most engaging things that happen are pretty much all when they're in the recording studio over the course of the movie. Once that goes away, once they start going on tour and start blowing up, then it just becomes about, like you said, Hollywood 101. It's just like hitting all the big beats, the big scenes, and then like the cheesy shit, like when... In case you didn't know that Eazy-E had AIDS, toward the end of the movie, toward the end of his...
All the well-placed coughs.
He would start coughing.
Oh, it was so bad.
So cheesy. But that was that way all through the movie. And by the way, did anybody notice this but me? O'Shea Jackson Jr., Ice Cube's son, looks like a robot. No, he looks... Like a robot Ice Cube. Like, he looks exactly like Ice Cube, but he can't act. And I mean, I guess he could act just fine.
He did fine.
I mean,
you know, he's probably not going to get nominated for anything, but like, he
not a lot
fine.
Of charisma.
It wasn't like Keanu Reeves distractingly bad.
Okay, fair enough. That's a fair point. All right, we're going
to start.
We could talk about this goddamn movie all day long. I have a feeling.
Well, we do need to veer into the topic at hand.
Yes, that's true. So, we had teased that this week it was going to be my album, and I had picked Father John Misty's I Love You, Honey Bear. But Kevin wants to be in the room for that one. So we let Matt pick this week. And Matt, why don't you tell us about what you picked?
Sure. It's a record from 1990 by... I don't want to say they're a little-known band, but I would go ahead and say they're a little-known band called Darling Buds. They're a little bitty footnote in kind of this weird transition in pop and indie rock, and with a record called Crawdaddy.
You know, it's funny, listening to this record was okay, it was a time machine for me. And this
that's
is,
exactly what I was.
This
thinking.
Is the yeah. shit that this is the kind of shit that I was listening to in
when you and I first started 100%. Hanging out. This is the kind of stuff that we listened
yeah,
to
totally.
All, like a ton.
But the interesting thing was, so I knew the first song, "It Makes No Difference," which, by the way, can I say, like, I've been really, really enjoying Wolf Alice lately.
Yep.
And man, do they sound a lot like that first song, "It Makes No Difference."
Yeah.
We'll talk about that later. And then I couldn't figure out. I was like, did I used to own this record and I just completely forgot about it? And then, like, a little ways down, a song came on and I realized I had it on a mixtape that I used to listen to when I had to clean the courthouse in Kerrville because I hydroplaned into my grandfather and destroyed his truck.
I hate it when that happens.
And the cop gave me a ticket for failure to maintain speed. And so... So, yes, but I would listen to this mixtape with that song was on it. It's like, oh, yeah, it's from that. And then as it went further, and I was like, but that did I own that? And I realized Daniel Matthews.
That makes sense.
A friend.
Because listening to this, I was like, how did we not listen to this shit all the time back yeah. then?
I think we did, but I think, like, Daniel.
I mean, it sounds kind of familiar to me, but I didn't know any of these songs.
Yeah.
And Daniel was my roommate, as you know. So I must have heard it.
Yeah, he was a fan of this band. But, you know, that's an exciting piece of musical history that I'm sure is riveting to the audience. But
oh, yeah.
A mutual friend of Ryan and mine used to really like this band. So that's where we heard it before. But how did we completely miss it?
I don't know. I would have thought it would have been heavy rotation.
You know, it's funny. It's one of those little records that I always kept going back to. And now, gosh, 20s. Almost 30 years on, or whatever it is from the release date, I think I'm on my fourth or fifth copy of it, just because I either wear it out, you know, and having to go back and get a new copy. It's just one of those things where I felt like it was my little secret for the longest time, and then you kind of.
Well, and they were on a major. They were on Epic, which is Sony.
Yeah.
And, like, man, they really dropped the ball because, like, this has all kinds of potential.
Oh, yeah, and it sounded good. The production. Yeah. Steven Street,
yeah.
You know what? But here's something about Steven. And he did the next record, too, which I guess there was a song off
Swan Song, I think.
It was, but there was a song off it, Long Day in the Universe, which was on the cult classic I Married an Axe Murderer soundtrack.
So I Married an Axe Murderer. Yeah, I love that movie.
And that record had the unfortunate name of being called...
Erotica.
Which a week later, Madonna
put out Erotica. Yeah,
Erotica.
Yeah. You think which somebody would have been on top of that too? You know, like at a fucking major label. Like, hey, by the way, the biggest artist in the entire world next week is going to put out a record with you. But you know, but you also would think that it might have had a little bit of a benefit on their album sales. Yeah. You know,
people pick up their own
with
copy.
Some accidental sales because the cover
is
of
even
it,
like kinda, yeah. Oh man, it was just very Madonna-esque on it.
Hey, why don't we listen to a song real quick and then we'll come back and talk some
you
more about
get
this.
That groovy. First track.
Yeah, It Makes No Difference. You want to do that?
Yeah.
Okay. This is "It Makes No Difference" by Darling Buds.
So, yeah, that song, Makes No Difference, actually landed at number 13 on the Modern Rock tracks on Billboard.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it would have been higher than that. That's I definitely remember that, like, hearing that song.
Well, right around this time, I was interning at, like, the first, like, alternative radio station here in Austin.
In the world? Oh, never mind.
Not in the world.
KNAC.
And, like, I don't remember them being in the rotation at all. Like, I don't know why not.
This kind of came into my consciousness because, of all places, when I was going to college in Amarillo, the junior college, Amarillo College, which would like be the ACC here, had a 100,000-watt radio station.
No shit.
Which pretty much covered all the entire panhandle, Oklahoma, New Mexico. And they had a great station called FM 90, and it won at the time. There was a thing called the Gavin Music Report, which was like the real indie kind of precursor to, what's the thing?
It was like CMJ or something.
Like the precursor to CMJ.
Yeah.
And, and the program director there, this guy by the name of Jamie Carr, just played great music, and he found always these great things. And then you'd end up seeing the video like on 120 minutes and like, oh, and then you'd make the connection. And you're like, wow.
Getting back to this song and this album, the production sounds great. And I don't always think Stephen Street's production ages very well.
Some of it's definitely
doesn't.
Dated.
The only thing in that song that really dates it is the incredible amount of reverb on her voice.
Yeah. The wispy.
And also, there's a lot of... Did you guys notice like that in interesting places on this record... the Stone Roses loom large in the background.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well, you know, so this is kind of my elevator speech synopsis of this record. It's like if the Sundays rocked more and there's like throwing a dash of Madchester sound to it.
Sure. There's definitely also, she sounds a little like, and the music definitely sounds a little like, Belly, like Tanya Donnelly. Mm-hmm. I could see.
Well, there were all those bands with like sort of sprite like Enigma. Lead singers, and I guess they were part of something called the Blonde Movement.
Yeah, I never heard of that before.
Me neither.
But the crazy thing about this record is it's really a precursor to like Elastica, to Belly, like you mentioned. It kind of lines
like Letters to Cleo.
Letters to Cleo.
Letters to Cleo, the American version.
And then, as like I said in the beginning, an extension of even now, like Wolf Alice.
I'm not familiar with Wolf Alice. I got to check this out.
I might have to change my pick today then or something.
Okay.
Yeah, it's right up your alley. There, Wolf Alice to me sounds like if you were to cross Letters to Cleo and Veruca Salt.
Sounds promising.
Yeah. We'll discuss this later.
And I kind of also wrote a couple other bands that kind of along the lines. Because to me, this record and an album by a band called Sleeper, which was also
Stephen Street.
An album called Sleeper Smart. It is really, they were the precursor of the Belly, Elastica. There's another band called Transvision Vamp, mm-hmm. right along the lines. And those were in that wheelhouse when I really loved a lot of the British band. You know, this band was from
Wales.
Well, and
Wales, frankly,
but
Shane's band back in the day, Clint.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think there you could
You guys
would
have made a perfect
that.
Opening act for these yeah. guys if they'd
sure. Yeah, I town. Mean, at some point I can even hear...
They might have been broken up by the time you guys
yeah,
got
I
around
think they
to
were. But yeah, similar sound, female singer,
kind of jangly pop
mm-hmm. with a little musculature, whatever mm-hmm. in there at times. Sometimes she even sounds like Sarah Shannon, the singer from Velocity Girl.
Yeah, Velocity Girl. I was going to bring them up too. The other thing that I like about it, and you mentioned it a couple times, is the Stephen Street production. It kind of, if you listen to some of the later records that he produced, a band called Gene, which was one of the biggest Smiths ripoff.
Oh yeah, yeah. We've discussed Gene on this show.
And then a band called Marion, which was the second subpar Smiths ripoff. And then the Courtneers, which was a band from a couple of years ago, and Cut Off Your Hands, two great bands that are direct ripoffs of the Smiths, but they have that great Stephen Street production that you can hear in this record where he kind of really hones it and then takes it to these younger kids from the last couple of years.
Right, yeah. Well, I don't know these bands that you're
it's
naming,
really
but
yeah,
I should write them down at some point. Yeah. You want to listen to another song?
Yeah.
You know what? Do you have songs picked out that you want to listen to?
Well, definitely I think what you should go with, if you've got it, the one that actually hit number 5 on the Modern Rock chart, which is Crystal Clear.
That's the one that was on my mixtape that I used to listen to when I had to mop up the courthouse because I wrecked my car into my grandfather's truck.
This is the video that 120 Minutes played a bunch, and it kind of went along with the Happy Mondays. This one's a little bit more... hippie psychedelic vibe to it. Mm-hmm.
It's got that Chapter House drum sound.
Exactly.
In it. While we're
that
talking
kind of
about
shuffling beat.
While we're talking about early '90s British bands.
Right.
Oh God.
You gonna bring up the House Martins now?
Yeah. Look, Mark just perked up. You know? But I knew that we were gonna fuck if I picked this album, like because Matt gave me a list of records. He's like, "How about one of these? One of these?" I was like, "Let's do that one." And I was like, "Fuck, we were just gonna fall into a." Early '90s British music, like
fucking wormhole,
Jello wrestling pool in the middle of the... Oh, God, that's a horrible mental image I need to remove from my head. Let's listen to Crystal Clear by the Darling Buds.
Crystal Clear. Excellent song that I'm just amazed that I don't know backwards and forwards already.
Excellent song and so of its time.
Very much. I mean, no, this is, like you said it right, like Time Machine. Like this whole record, listen to it. And I immediately, it wasn't one of those things that had to grow on me. Like immediately I'm like, oh, I know this.
Oh, yeah. For me it was, it just reminded me of like summers, like go into the swimming hole and stuff like that. Like it was very visceral, like my response to listening to this stuff. But that was the interesting thing, is and then realizing like, well, I really don't know any of these fucking songs. They just fit right into that paradigm.
They're exactly the kind of thing we were listening to back then.
And it was the vibe that kind of went along, and it, you know, it's unfortunate because this little band just kind of got caught between these big changes in music.
They stopped playing music because they weren't being successful, which is crazy.
Well, I mean, yeah, that is crazy, but we don't know the whole story on that. The internet is lacking for many details on the Darling Buds.
Yeah, the Wikipedia entry is not even really
just,
short.
Not even just that, just all over the place. I attempted to dig in a little bit, and there was not much.
They kind of called it quits like right before the internet became like a thing.
Yeah.
You know, a daily presence in people's lives.
And here's the thing that's interesting. The most interesting, and Matt, you commented on this earlier, is that, I mean, like, we'll all agree, like, this record is not a life-changing record, but it is perfectly pleasant.
It's absolutely pleasant. If I have a beef with it, is that it kind of peters off towards the end. The songs aren't as good.
That is exactly
and
right.
And lyrically, I'm such a Harriet Wheeler fan from the Sundays, like, they're perfectly serviceable, just fine lyrics.
I'm gonna take two minor issues with that.
Go for it.
The one thing is, Matt, can you give me that? Why I'm just like saying it to you off the mic, like it's a secret.
track listing right here.
And it's not the lyrics themselves that become workmanlike, or it's the topics of conversation. The topics a lot about heartbreak, but there's some really pointed evil stuff sometimes.
And I don't think they're all crabby, but I remember like listening to one of the songs. It's probably one of the last three that I'm just like, really, is that where you're going with this? And they're not Noel Gallagher stupid. like they're better than that. They're just not like where I'm going. Like man, that's amazing. Like I didn't have that moment while listening to this record. That said, they're not so bad that I think they take away from the music.
I actually think that my favorite song on this record is the second to the last record, or the second to the last song.
Which one's that?
So Close.
So Close. Hmm.
And it's like one of the slower ones. Yeah. I wish they would have put it in the middle of the record. And
broken it up a little bit.
Yeah, my quibble with the record is it's all mid-tempo. There's not a lot of variations in the songs. Mm-hmm. They kind of start to blend together that way.
Yeah.
But that song is really different. I get what you're saying about it petering out a little bit, but
Not necessarily every song, but like the first, I don't know, three, four, five songs, I'm like, oh, man,
they're just so
a really
in your face,
fucking good record. And then it starts to kind of blend in.
It starts together. That's the thing. I don't think there's a most of, and we've talked about this numerous times on the show.
Well, probably most of these songs could have been a single.
True, but that's the thing. Like, and so our good friend Marcus Rice, I may have mentioned this before on the show, but it definitely needs to be mentioned. When you're a band and you write nothing but singles, you're just always trying to swing for the fences. Mm-hmm. Your home runs get lost. amongst home runs, you know, and that's, you see that a lot. Like, you see, it starts to become a little samey after a while. There's not a lot of, like you know, variation. Like, throw a couple ballads in there, and I'm not talking, like, you know, Wanted Dead or Alive kind of ballad, but, you know, like...
I wish you would.
Well, track five is a song called You Won't Make Me Die, and it's kind of the big sweeping ballad of the record, which is kind of cool, but it kind of really does sound very 90s kind of ballad, almost like they're swinging for the fences if you're trying to cross over.
I think that song, I like the lyrics in that one.
Yeah, it's really good. It kind of, that one to me sounds almost like it should be on a Velocity Girl record.
Right. Yeah. I agree. Well, okay, listen.
We should get into the middle section a few minutes with.
Intermission, and we'll come back in.
Okay. All right, I guess I'm going to pull an audible, and I'll go ahead, and since in honor of our special guest, Matt Munoz.
If you have something that's really fucking great, like Van Halen's Pretty
Woman. Well, okay, so, man, this is tough. Because I was going to stick with, like, the theme of this record and pick Lloyd, I'm Ready to Be Heartbroken, which has a really entertaining video by Cameron Obscura.
I'm a huge fan of that.
Has a really entertaining video. But then when I was watching 120 Minutes the other day, I saw Ouija Board by
I've actually never seen that
for the
video.
First
Wait,
time.
No, I think I don't think
oh,
I've ever
seen. Yes, you have.
I've seen it, right? Isn't there, like, a crystal ball involved?
Yeah. I'm a little torn. Like, I for the last several days, I've been kind of going back and forth. Like, do I want to... Like, the video... So, those of you out there have not heard Lloyd, I'm Ready to Be Heartbroken, you could probably just plop it down in the middle of this record and...
It's a perfect pop song.
Yeah, it's a great pop song. It's probably better than anything on this record. However, as much as I like this record, but it's definitely of the same genre.
Yes.
Like, and it has a very entertaining video. Also, Morrissey, Ouija Board is both a good song and a really ridiculous video.
Okay, I want to do the Ouija Board.
All right, let's in honor of Matt being here and you guys being massive.
And now producer Mark was telling us that he's a huge Smiths fan too, which
I am.
I did not know that. So,
all right, well, let's get into it. A little bit of Ouija Board by Morrissey.
Ouija Board, would you help me? Because I still do feel so horribly lonely. Would you Ouija board? Would you Ouija board? Would you help me? And I just can't find my place in this world.
Ouija board.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah, I've always liked that song, even though I think it's a little goofy.
I think it's goofy on purpose. You know, I remember, you know, years ago, I slavishly fawned over everything the man released, at least until Kill Uncle, but we can talk about that later. That's another show. But I was like, this is fucking goofy. But now, in my older, after watching that video especially, I realized that there's a lot of humor in there. I mean,
for sure.
Know it's a humorous song because of the line when he actually makes contact on the Ouija board and it says Steven, which is his first name.
Yeah, well, it's like he's contacting his younger self.
Yeah. Like,
in that same period, like Bone of Drag, what's the song where he says, like, you know, like, oh, I'm giving it up. And everybody's like, yeah.
Oh, I changed my mind again.
Yeah, I've changed my mind again. Oh.
Like, yeah, that's a good song. So that video, for those of you that haven't seen it, it's worth a look.
It's weird because it's, you know, it does that country music thing where, like, the video's about what the song's about, but it's also Morrissey weird. You know, like there's little people running around and like an androgynous kind of little person. And
but so here's the thing about Morrissey Weird is that it's obvious that the guy has a great sense of humor, right?
Sure.
But his ego is so big and crazy weird at the same time that sometimes it's difficult to remove from what is actually meant to be funny.
And what he's like completely being straight-faced about.
Because as Matt pointed out before we watched this, this video is Morrissey's pompadour in its fullest splendor.
Yeah, it's most brilliant.
And there's funny stuff. I mean, you know it's supposed to be funny. Like, he's sitting in a room with, like, this David Lynchian wallpaper behind him. And then it goes to this gypsy woman that's reading a crystal ball, and then she's going to set the crystal ball on a shelf, and you can see on the bottom of the crystal ball there's a sticker on the bottom of it that says marked for clearance. I mean, you know it's supposed to be funny, yeah. Mm-hmm. but at the same time,
well, and then she takes, like, I don't know if it's like mushrooms or what, but she drinks something out of the fridge and starts tripping, I guess.
And there's two small children wearing like elevator operator from like the early 20th century with the elevator operator like pillbox hat thing and mm-hmm. all the rows of buttons that are like leading him through the forest.
Yeah, it's perfectly.
I would say maybe Wes Anderson looked at this video a couple of times before.
Perhaps.
He made that was the movie.
All of them.
Well,
possibly, yeah. No, but the one with the
kids in the tracksuits
Grand Budapest.
Yeah, okay, right.
What the kid is wearing in that movie? That's what these little kids were wearing as they led Morrissey through the forest.
And so the connection between the video and the Darling Buds record is that Stephen Street co-wrote the song with Morrissey.
That's true. So there was a run of singles after Viva Hate, and this was one of them. Was this like the at the end of that, or was it at the in the middle of? Because there were a bunch of singles that were really well received.
Well, Bone of Drag was basically a collection of singles, right?
Bone of Drag was after Viva Hate.
Yeah,
after those sessions. I think this is kind of may have been at some point a demo in those sessions. You know, the Viva Hate was originally called Education in Reverse. So I think this is one of those tracks that kind of were towards the end of the session, if my memory kind of. A lot of information about Morrissey in my head, so
sure.
I think it's somewhere along the lines there. But the interesting fact is the B-side, "Yes, I Am Blind," which is one of my favorite.
It's a great, great song,
and written by Andy Rourke, who was in the Smiths.
I did not know that.
Yeah. It's just one of those things that I think it's so funny because you have that. It's I don't know, the whimsical take on this record, and then the B-side is this beautiful anthemic. Classical Morrissey.
Very, very, very different. There's a lot of whimsy in this, but I think it's also sort of like it's a really, really winking knowledge of what it's doing. And especially if you watch that video, you can tell that. And I think if it were eviscerated by critics at the time, and it was at the time, it was because I don't think a lot of people, because it's a big tonality shift from what you're used to from Morrissey, even when he's at his funniest.
Yeah.
That's often. This is just. It's like going from Welcome to the Dollhouse type comedy to like the Marx Brothers. I mean, there's a tonality shift that you're not used to. And if you think that he's taking himself seriously in this, which he obviously isn't, I could see why at the time, like in retrospect, I bet a lot of those people, if they listen to a song, they're like, oh, yeah, right, didn't get it then.
Yeah, well, that's their loss.
Well, and it's our gain.
That's true.
Thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Pick.
Okay, well.
We should get back to the task at hand.
There you go.
Yeah, that was certainly entertaining.
Could go on and on.
That's true.
We're not going to.
We could. We just, in the break. Ryan went outside to have half a cigarette, that as is his want.
That is my want.
You're such a creature of habit. Like, you...
True.
You never, ever ask to have... You always wait till after the second... till after the intermission. To have half of a cigarette.
That's when I've had about a drink and a half.
Oh, okay.
And
like, well...
And it's been a little while.
But you are a creature of habit.
Yeah.
So in the intermission between the intermission and now... Matt and I just geeked out about Smith's or in Morrissey stories, and yeah, you know what? It turns out you kind of just don't let that stuff go. Like when you see like dudes that are in their like late 60s that are like, you can hear Slow Ride like. Yeah. Like mm-hmm. you know, coming out of their car speakers, and they're like still like headbanging to it and stuff. Like the shit that you bond with when you're a teenager doesn't really ever
that's
go
with you forever.
It's a beautiful thing.
Okay, so Darling Buds, you know, I'm really glad that you brought this up. It's not. I've been thinking about bringing up some stuff from the early '90s, music that you know, pop music, British centric, as it were, music. But I know it all so well.
You're a well-known Anglophile.
That's true. But I know a lot of that music really well. Oh, you know what I heard on the way over here tonight? By the way, this is a band that I've thought about, and this is a record that I've wanted to bring up a lot, was All Right by Supergrass.
Oh, yeah.
It's placed in a commercial.
It's commercial right now.
It is in a commercial right now. But
I don't actually know I should Cocoa all the way through.
It's a great record. Incredible. I've heard, highly underrated.
Our friend Steve back in the day was a big Supergrass fan, but... and so I've heard bits and pieces of it, but I've never sat down and listened to it all the way through.
So yeah. Anyway, Supergrass. Like I was like, God damn! Another underrated band from this period of time. But this band happens to be one of the acts, groups, bands that I knew but didn't know that well.
Yeah,
that
kind of slipped through the cracks.
Yep.
And I really think that Sony really dropped the ball, or their management or something.
It makes no sense to me.
Like, so many of these songs sound like they'd be in, you know, like 90s teen movies.
And I think the crime here is that if they would have come around maybe a year or two later, they would have been Elastica Big or Belly Big.
Oh, the hooks are there. Yeah.
It was the precursor to that stuff that eventually did break through to the mainstream and.
But
it was
all
over modern rock radio.
And I remember seeing the name around, and I was, you know, one of those things. I just kind of fouled to the back of my mind, like, oh, I'll get around to listening to those guys, and then they just weren't around anymore.
It was, and you know, doing some research for the record, I did find some YouTube videos of them kind of playing a gig in April of this year, and her voice still sounds fantastic.
Yeah, that's right. They reformed to some capacity.
I just looked up their Facebook like yesterday, and apparently they've already. Rebroken up.
I think they kind of
like it's with a heavy heart that I and I'm like, what? Didn't this happen 20 years ago?
Well, it's good stuff. Is there one you want to listen to on our way out?
Let's talk a little bit about the song I brought up a little bit. I don't know if we did it on.
We did. We hadn't listened to it.
It's track 5, which is called "You Won't Make Me Die." And
yeah,
I think it's kind of a sweeping power ballad, but you could kind of hear it. Today, it's definitely nods to...
I don't know. When you say sweeping power ballad, I think of, like, Cinderella or...
or Home Sweet Home by, like, Motley Crue.
Or Angel by Aerosmith.
I'll rephrase what I was about to say. So it kind of is the ballad with a nod to Please, Please, Please.
It's very influenced by the Smiths.
Yeah, you can hear that for a fact.
Reaction to this has been really positive.
Wait a minute. Let me just state for the record that finally Mark's picked up a microphone.
Yeah, have you spoken yet?
I don't.
I've been soaking it all in.
I don't know what he's doing. Now.
I've been live tweeting the show.
Live tweeting.
Is that illegal?
So who are these bastards?
Is that illegal?
Bastards in my garage.
So yeah, that, there's a really positive vibe about this band, about this album. But all of the comments, like on air and off air, are about, oh, and this sounds like that, and oh, this sounds like that. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, I think that's sort of...
I mean, they definitely wear their influences on their sleeve.
I think of why they didn't really kind of push through. I mean, again, like we were saying, like it's not a groundbreaking record. It's a perfectly pleasant record, but it does cull a lot. And we have definitely brought that up. Like there's not a ton of originality in the...
I mean, you could easily take the complete opposite stance and say... Oh, they're so unoriginal. They just sound like all these other people
take an artist like, say, Lenny Kravitz, where, like, he pretty blatantly rips off a lot of stuff. And this is more like, I feel like, an homage to their influences. I mean, this song is probably the closest to, like, even, like, a specific song. I mean, you hear this come in and you're like, good times for a change.
Well, I mean, I get what he's saying. I get what you're saying, Mark. I mean, I hate the term, like, ripping off. I mean, I just say it's of its time. I mean, when I said earlier the Stone Roses loom large, it's not that everybody sounded like that. They tapped, that was the zeitgeist.
Well, but I don't have any problem with, you know, a band being influenced by another artist. You know, there's...
I don't either.
And I don't either. And I'm not really, I mean, I guess I'm kind of playing devil's advocate for whatever it's worth. But, I mean... This is nostalgic. This brings back a lot of memories, and it was of its time. This is what tons and tons of bands sounded like. I can name a half dozen at least right off.
Yeah. If I'd been a giant Darling Buds fan and then I heard Camera Obscura, I'd probably be like, oh, what a ripoff. But it happens, I ended up knowing Camera Obscura first.
But if you go and you listen to, like, say, let's say popular music today, like hip-hop, like when there's a trend. And I think, like, what we're picking up on here more than anything else is just the way that music sounded at the time. So the people, those bands that rose to the top during that time, we're thinking, oh, yeah, they sound like that, they sound like that, they sound like that. Whereas in reality, that's just how bands sounded at that time. Like
there was a ton of bands.
A ton of bands sounded that way at that time.
Probably every major music market, you know, that had, you know, a thriving scene had at least one band that sounded like this.
Sure. Yeah.
You guys were it here in Austin.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, and I never heard this band before, so...
And it kind of, to
I mean,
me,
I had heard them before, but...
To me, there's a couple things that are great about the record. Like, you know, everybody's discussed, it's not groundbreaking, it's not a monumental record, but I think it's one of those records that really fills in the gaps. And if it was a little bit more on the timing aspect or whatever those weird...
I think a lot of it was
factors.
Timing. I think you are right about that.
It could have been a bigger record, but...
Yeah, they just missed their window somehow.
Yeah, for me, it's one of those things that's still a great... listen, and I think it's a precursor to the Elasticas and to modern day stuff like Best Coast, Pains of Being Pure at Heart, those kind of bands that kind of come from what this built before.
It's part of the foundation that this built,
and,
yeah.
And, you know, those kinds
of... I'll just say that a lot of times I'll get into a record that we're covering for the show, and I'm like counting how many tracks, all right, how long do I have to listen to this? And this, I was just like, oh, I get to listen.
Well,
to
it's short.
It's short.
It's an easy listen, and it's a pretty short record. Yeah. Like,
but it, you know, with each new song, I was like, "All right, I can get behind this."
Yeah. Matt, thanks for coming in today.
Absolutely,
this is a good pick. We'd love to have you back as often as possible, but you know, I realize that you have another life. So, you know,
unlike all of us.
Oh, right. Sorry about that.
Yeah, I pretty much just prepped for this show for the rest of the week.
I am happy to be back on here, and, you know, the fact that you guys are helping Shandozia get out there.
Oh, we haven't brought that
up. We haven't even talked about this, so we do need to, and I love how you threw that in there, because I had forgotten, like, it's in one of the breaks.
We're like the Shandozia Political Action Committee.
Absolutely.
We've made it, so those of you that listen to the show, longtime listeners, will know that the first time that Matt came on the show, he introduced us to Shandozia,
the greatest of any of the intermission songs we've done.
It is there's nothing that even tops it. I mean, it even gets close to topping it. And the song is Pink Panties, P-A-N-N-I-E-S.
P-A-N-N-I-E-S.
And so Shandozia was a late 90s R&B singer, cut from the same cloth.
R. Kelly.
As R. Kelly and who's the cat that just put a record out last year?
D'Angelo.
Yeah, D'Angelo. But, however, he has his own interesting twist on this genre. So when we started listening to this, there were around, I don't know, 50 views of the song.
Oh, no, it was more than that.
It was like 1,000 or less.
It was less than 1,000.
It was like maybe 1,500.
No,
like
it was less than 1,000.
I think it was right at like maybe...
in the 700s.
Yeah, 700. Like it was less than 1,000.
Well, we're starting to write it down now.
Yeah, so we're writing it
down
now.
We're moving the needle here.
So we've discussed this, and this song has sat dormant since 1999, and we've all taken it on our backs.
Under our wings.
Yeah, basically, I'm like, this song had passed out on Mount Everest, and I'm a Sherpa that's thrown it on my back. That's going to single-handedly
make... At least you're not given to hyperbole. That's great.
Yeah. I'm going to single-handedly make sure that it...
The world needs to know.
...reaches the summit. The world does need to know.
I'm not saying Straight Outta Compton is a horrible, horrible movie, but I would have rather have seen the story of Shandozia.
Just that one song. Just see that.
Well, and to recap for any of you new listeners, it's basically
a Cinderella
story, but instead of a glass slipper, it's panties.
Yeah, so
he had too much to drink.
He had a lot to drink, and he apparently went home with somebody, though he doesn't remember if he did or who it was, but he found a pair of pink panties on his floor, and he's imploring that person...
To come try them on.
To come try them on to see if they fit them, so he'll know...
Fit him.
So that in that way, he'll know that they are, in fact, that person's panties.
It's the gift that keeps on giving.
It doesn't. So the last time we stopped in... We are slowly inching the needle forward. Last time we stopped in, about 3 weeks ago, it had moved from 700 to 6,000, and now it's only moved 1,386 places or views since we last saw it. So it's not exactly viral. Moving on. So we are going to go back to the States. We're going to watch we're going to listen to a song called In Its Infancy, parenthetical, The Waterfall, by My Morning Jacket. Video pretty much is riveting. This is a crazy-ass, weird song. And the video is just hyperkinetic. So I hope you guys are ready for that.
Question, Shane, did you dose my wine?
Right. No. However, there is no doubt in my mind that Jim James...
Somebody had some
mushrooms?
Psychedelic medication.
There is no doubt in my mind that psychedelics in some way were involved in the making of that song, which, by the way, I don't know if you guys like this. Despite my better judgment, I love this song.
It's a pretty good song. They're like grandiose Americana rock. Like if Pink Floyd had decided to go Americana.
All right, I can see that. I don't see the Americana part, but I definitely can see what you're saying. I don't know. It's like a mini sweet. There's no real chorus. There's no real verse. There's really not that many lyrics.
But at least the video lets you know when you're halfway through. And when you're coming up to the end.
Because the waterfall flips?
Yeah.
Yeah. That. Oh, by the way, hyperkinetic video. Let's talk about like how much was going on in that.
Well, the first 2 minutes of it, like nothing's happening but a pan down of a waterfall.
But that's pretty much the first 5 minutes of the whole video.
I don't know how long it lasted. I kind of
like
tranced
five minutes,
out.
6 seconds. Yeah, you were wishing that I had dosed your wine.
To me, the song is a modern version of that Spinal Tap song.
Right. I totally get that. Like, that makes sense. That's the beginning part where it's like, the idea was always there.
Oh, are you talking about, like, Stonehenge?
Yeah, Stonehenge.
Not Big Bottom.
No,
Stonehenge. Right, but that's the thing. Like, it starts out with this really funny thing, and then it just goes into this cool song that's also insane and... LSD was involved somewhere.
Yeah. And I'm not trying to knock them by comparing it to Spinal Tap, but
I get what you're saying. Yeah. I think that warrants the comparison. Yeah. Especially considering that they have this like day glow picture of a waterfall and that's the entire video and it slowly just
flips. It's like one of those like posters you'd look at in the 80s that if you looked hard enough it'd turn into like a space shuttle.
Oh yeah, you know what it also reminded me like some people's parents, you'd go over to their house and they had this thing from the 70s where they were like these flowers but they were made out of like small little what's the word for it? Damn it.
Pipe cleaners?
Thanks, Mark. Yeah.
Puppet chow?
Thank you. No, they would light at the... not cystic fibrosis.
Oh, you mean God damn it. Fiber optics?
Fiber optics. They would have all these little fiber optic things that would make a flower, and then they would light up as they turned, and they would turn into different colors. Yeah. You guys know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
That's what that video reminds me of.
Yeah, it was like an updated lava lamp. Like.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And then he's talking about how the idea was always there for many years. And again, he stops the waterfall by merely thinking. By merely feeling.
Yeah, you bet.
Yeah,
sure thing.
But
Jimmy.
It's good. But that's the thing. It's funny as it is, in the meat of, I'm just like banging my hand down like something's. Ryan,
Your Honor,
stop in the name of love. It's still a fun song to listen to.
I
would not change the channel, but partially for the humor aspect, but partially it's just a. It's a pretty good song.
Well, the first I just made me want to watch that Travis video of "Why Does It Always Rain on Me," where it's got like that really verdant cliff jump off of. And
I haven't seen it.
Really?
No, but that's I do want to do a Travis video in the intermission. I'm glad you mentioned it, and I've forgotten it until right now.
You know what? It also reminds me of keeping on the satirical kind of funny thing. Is I think it's an SNL skit. Lothar of the Hill people.
Yeah, Mike Mills.
Oh yeah, that's funny. Yeah, you just say Mike Mills.
No, I said Mike Myers.
It would be funnier if it were Mike Mills.
If they,
Mike
they had like Mike Mills like from R.E.M. like guest host
as Lothar.
Lothar.
Okay, guys. That was fun. Good time. I'm glad that you guys enjoyed that crazy cross-cutting video. I mean, you never knew what angle they were going to come from in that jacket one. Yeah. So thanks for putting up with that. Next week, we'll be back with one of my picks.
Do you care to reveal?
Of course. I already revealed it. It's Father John Misty.
Oh, yeah.
I love you, Honey Bear. And let's see.
And my brother should be back.
Yeah. I'm going to say, because we usually like to do 2 weeks in advance, I'm going to say that Kevin's probably going to pick the soundtrack to Footloose.
Oh yeah. You got your finger on
prominently
the pulse right
featuring
there.
Kenny Loggins.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if he doesn't, I'm not wagering any money, but if he doesn't,
you're not going to eat your hat,
I'll eat my hat.
All right,
I'll eat the hat I'm wearing right now.
Okay.
All right. So, thank you again, Matt.
Thank you, guys.
This has been great, great fun. Until next week,
and also in the interim between.
Oh, what?
You're going to be Shane.
Well,
until next week. Yes, thank you for pointing that out. I don't know where my head goes at these times. Anyway, I'm Shane.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Matt.
And I'm Mark.
This is Somebody Likes It.